Nathan, do you want to grab one?
No, just the commissioners.
I'm aiming. Fish out? Where? See here?
I don't see him yet.
He's supposed to be here, right?
I don't see him.
So we're about to convene a regular scheduled meeting of the San Juan County PhD number one. Today's day is Thursday, June 27th, and it's 2 minutes after 3 o'clock. First agenda item is today's meeting's agenda approval. Can I hear a motion to accept the agenda as written?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
In favor? Aye.
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 Passes unanimously. The second item is consent agenda. Can I hear a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second? Very good. All in favor, say aye.
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 Very good. So we have two outside reports, the first of which is given by Linda McCarthy, who is the executive director of Mount Baker Planned Parenthood.
Okay. This works.
Okay. How's that working? Is that good? Okay. Thank you for inviting me today to talk with you all. I put together a presentation which you've received and then a PowerPoint that'll go along with that closely so that the community can see. So who's driving? Oh.
I'll drive.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry.
You have your learner's permit?
No, I don't. That's the problem.
There it is. I don't think I've been in a meeting yet that hasn't had a technology fail. Okay, so we're Mount Baker Planned Parenthood. I think most of you know we serve Whatcom, Skagit, and San Juan counties. You can flip to the next slide. Well, a snapshot again of us. We started in 1969, so we turned 50 this year. We accredited as a Planned Parenthood in 1970. We expanded our services in Skagit in 1980. And we've been in San Juan County since 1995. Okay. And that's our that was our health center. It's on Reed Street. If you've not been there, you should check it out some Thursday afternoon. So Planned Parenthood has three legs of the stool. It's medical services, education, and advocacy. And we're here today pretty much to talk about our medical services. So the primary book of business for Planned Parenthood is contraception. We do all methods of birth control from natural family planning all the way up to IUDs and implants, 10-year methods, STI testing and treatment, cancer screenings. We use the Preventative Health Services Task Force schedule for cancer screenings. So for pap smears, it's changed significantly. Years ago, it used to be you had your first pap when you became sexually active or at 18. Now it's 21, and those schedules have moved out from 3 to 5 years. And there's some data out there that in the next 3 or 4 years, we probably won't do pap smears at all. We'll be doing HPV testing because that is the infection that causes cervical cancer. We also do pregnancy testing, gender-affirming hormone therapy for our transgender patients, and we provide abortion care in Whatcom and Skagit County. So we are one of 53 affiliates in the nation. Last year, we served 9,567 patients. Men make up about 13% of our patient population. The patients came in for 15,231 visits, and that does not include our supply visits. And then abortion care is a question people want to know. It's about 4% of our visits. 633 of our 15,231 visits last year were for abortion care, which is almost split between in-clinic surgical procedures and medication abortion. Okay. So this is just a snapshot of the patient volume and where they are. So for our 15,000 visits, 10,000, two-thirds of them were in Bellingham, Mount Vernon was 4,561, and Friday Harbor was 247. Okay. And so this is a distribution of zip codes. As you can see, that the bulk of our patients live here in Friday Harbor. The next largest population is the other San Juan Islands, followed by Washington State residents, and then out of state's a small portion of that care. And I think I mentioned to you last time that the majority of those are visiting people that live here. I can tell by their zip codes from some of our donors. Here's our patients' distribution by age. So in the circle, you'll see our organization-wide numbers outside of the circle in the pink or red, whichever color that is. That's the Friday Harbor distribution. So you can see that our less than 17, so our teenage population, there were 17 teens served that are younger than 18, 19 that were 18 to 19, and then the large group being the 20 to 24, and was 49, and then the 25 to 29 were 42. And that's what we pretty much see, as you can see those numbers overall, that the primary group of our patients is 20 to 29. And then there were the 30 to 39, we served 40 here, and 27 that were 40 plus. So we serve women and men of all ages. We don't care how old they are. We provide services for Medicaid, Medicare, TRICARE, sliding scale, and insurance, and anything in between. So we are accepting of anybody, and if they have no insurance, we'll cover them as well. So the next slide. So this is our payment by source of visit. So the Medicaid is 61 of our patients here were Medicaid. 69 were self-pay. That means they had no insurance and they were on our sliding fee scale with a great portion of them at the low or no cost care. 64 had insurance, but that's really sort of a misnomer to say they had insurance. A lot of our patients, probably at least half, maybe more, have high deductible plans. So those their charges go to their deductible. And we have a policy at our office that we don't penalize people for using health insurance. So if their plan goes to deductible, we then look back at their income and we put them on the sliding scale as to where they are. So for an example, if a patient would have, so we bill our usual and customary as we would at a private doctor's office. Say it's, let's just use 100 for an easy number. 100 and it gets put to deductible, that patient isn't necessarily charged $100 unless they're at the top end of our fee scale. So if they would have normally fallen in the very lowest end, under 100% of poverty, their service is actually written down to zero. And if it's higher than that, it's written down to the sliding scale. So they're not penalized for using their insurance with us, and they get the benefit of it going to their deductible. And that seems to be, you know, a good way for people to get the care that they need without feeling like their insurance doesn't really work for them. It's a growing number of our patients. We actually have it at Planned Parenthood. We have either a high deductible or a PPO plan people can choose, and it's pretty significant. Some of these deductibles are $5,000 or $10,000, so patients never really get there, and so we try to keep our care affordable. And then the other here, payment by source, looks like it's 121, and I don't know why that would be that high. Because it doesn't make sense. So that would be, I don't know what that number would be, so I will find out. So here's our poverty level. This is what I was talking to you about a minute ago. So it's hard to read that from a distance, but what you're looking at is 74 of our patients, or the bulk of our patients overall, are up to 100% of the poverty level, which means for Mount Baker Planned Parenthood, their services are free. They are they slide to zero on our sliding scale, and their income, I believe, is $12,140 a year for an individual, or $25,100 for a family of four. And as you, then they go up to 101 to 150, you just multiply that by the number. As you can see, the bulk of our patients are in the first three categories. And the unknown categories often is people don't want to provide their income. So the people that don't provide their income don't get slid on the scale because they have to provide the income because it's a federally based program, and we have to be able to identify who they are and what their income is in order to give them that slide. So we are hitting the mission here for both in Friday Harbor and in our other services of serving those who need us the most. Okay, next slide. And here's just a select services that of the primary services that we do. The bulk of our work is birth control, contraceptive care, followed by sexually transmitted infections, pregnancy testing, cancer screenings, and then abortion care. So as you can see, 425 visits in Friday Harbor were for birth control. Our services, 182 were sexually transmitted infection testing, 50 were pregnancy tests, 40 were cancer screenings, and 0 were abortion care. We had a donor event here on Friday night, and one of our donors gave us an envelope, and that envelope included a gift, and it included a note with it, which I just did the thank you yesterday. And the note said, Planned Parenthood saved my daughter's life. When she was in college and couldn't afford to go to the doctor, she went to Planned Parenthood. She was diagnosed with pre-cervical cancer. You got her the care that she needed, so thank you. And it was just really touching to get that note from a patient and from a donor. We get them from patients. I literally just came from the Friday Harbor Health Center, and a young woman just walked in the door, and our staff said, oh, thank you. And she had been to our office for a visit earlier today, and her services were no charge because of her sliding scale. But she decided she wanted to make a donation, so she went home and came back and gave us a donation. I had no idea what it was, but she said, no, thank you. So it's just touching when you hear these stories and you run into them where you least expect it, or the stories that people tell you are just, you know, touching for a variety of reasons. Okay, next slide. So here's the STI testing that we do. So we did 17,687 tests last year. 182 of them were in the San Juan clinic, and as you can see, not one of those was positive, which is really unusual. I had to double check those numbers, and they're accurate, so we're delighted to see that. In chlamydia and gonorrhea and syphilis are growing concerns in our communities. The Whatcom County Health Department just released data from 2018, and our clinic diagnosed 31% of all the STDs in Whatcom County. So we're a tight part of the safety net there. We are concerned about the growing number of syphilis tests. Everybody is, to see, and for many years, very few people saw syphilis at all. And now it's making a recurrence all across the country, and so it's a concern. So it's important to have those tests available. Okay, so here's the pregnancy testing and abortion care. As you can see, 50 women in San Juan County had pregnancy tests. 0 of them needed an abortion. We helped people access prenatal care for a few of those cases when they were pregnant and delighted to be. And we also provide infertility help people get a healthy start for their pregnancy by helping them get on the right vitamins and know where to go and all that. So it's delightful. Next slide. So this is, again, the theoretical estimates of pregnancies averted that we talked about last time. This is a federal formula, and for 2018, the services of Mount Baker Planned Parenthood Contraceptive Services averted 1,702 unintended pregnancies, and they come in down into three categories. They were either a birth averted, unintended birth averted, an abortion averted, or a miscarriage averted. And in the way the formula works out, 37 of those were in the Friday Harbor Health Center. And again, the red or pink numbers on the outside of the dial show you where you are. The 6 up at the top in the greenish slide were for births averted that were under 19 years old. The next light blue were births that were averted 20 and older. The red is abortions that were averted for under 19. The white were abortions that were averted for over 20. The miscarriages were averted were 2 under 19, and then the miscarriage averted were 3 for over 20. So you can see that birth control services here have helped avert 37 unintended pregnancies with those possible outcomes. Okay, so this Press Ganey is a national patients and staff satisfaction company. If you've been to Peace Health, you would have for a service, you would have received an email from them or a survey. I know my husband just had a visit in Bellingham with a specialist from Peace Health, and he got one from them. And I opened it up because they ask the same questions, and they ask the same questions that we do. It's a national survey, so you're benchmarked against each other. And what these show you is what we have for the last year from May of 18 through May of 19 for the months in Friday Harbor. The ones that don't have anything there were there weren't enough samples, and we just had Prescani consultants come out to our affiliate just last week, and we met with them. And what we have developed with them is a pathway to educate our patients better about what these tests are, because they what they found nationally is we do a lot of texting and emailing of these, that people are afraid to open things that they don't expect coming. They think it might be spam or actually malware or something like that. And we are doing a terrible job of letting people know this is coming. So we're going to be focusing our efforts on encouraging our patients to take their patient satisfaction surveys, whether good, bad, or indifferent. We'd like to know what they say. But this is what the Friday Harbor patients say to us over the last year. Okay. And this is a tiny print of, sorry for you in the audience. This was our finances for Friday Harbor last year on the left side and all the blue. And then on the right side, there's just a snapshot of the last 5 years, 2014 through 2018. And you can see that our excess, we had an excess of revenue in 2018 of $763. After the subsidy from the hospital district and our fundraising and our patient revenue. So we ended the year in the black. And that is my report, and I'm very happy to entertain any questions, talk about any challenges. I know we have a lot coming. If you have questions about what's going on with us nationally, I'm happy to answer them as well.
Any questions or comments from the board?
Yes, Mr. Appleton.
I have a couple questions. Can you hear me? Does this thing work?
You got to be on top of it.
On top of it. I'm always on top of it. Anyway, I do have a couple questions.
Sure.
Your STI testing, syphilis, gonorrhea, GC, HIV?
Yes, we offer HIV. We do rapid HIV testing, and then we also, if the rapid test comes up, we do the confirming test.
You offer it, you mean you offer it to them, or you do it on clinical criteria?
We provide it to, well, it's clinical criteria, but yes, we offer it to anybody that, people that come in and say, I want an HIV test.
Okay, and if any of those are positive, how do you follow through with that? How do you do treatments? How do you do follow-up?
If they're positive, if it's in clinic, rapid positive, we do the confirming Western blot, I believe it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Higher level test. And if that's positive, then we connect them with the regional, like Ryan White folks that do the follow-up and the treatments for that population. We also provide, I didn't say this earlier, PrEP and PEP. So both of those services, PrEP is pre-exposure. Pre-exposure, medication for pre-exposure and medication for post-exposure for people who are engaging usually in men having sex with men so that they will reduce the incidence of HIV.
Any need for telemedicine?
We're looking at telemedicine. We are actually getting ready in next week to post a job for a social worker, a behavioral health specialist, and trying to look at starting with one full-time person and then look at whether we can provide telehealth services into both Skagit and San Juan County, where we're very interested in telehealth.
I'm sure you're aware of the recent airlift and all those charges, et cetera, et cetera. Are you aware of this, everyone else?
I've heard a little bit about it.
Okay, so one of those was a woman who was pregnant. And her claim was denied because she didn't go off island in the last couple weeks of her pregnancy. The other issue that I have, being a physician, is, and having delivered babies on this island, is this really not the place that I would want to deliver, have my child delivered, in case there was a problem. That's 2% of births. And Planned Parenthood, I take it for the word, is I hear it going up to a certain level of we're going to get you to a healthy start. Now, in Alaska, when out on the outer islands, when a pregnant woman gets to be 36 weeks, they go into Ketchikan, serendipitously in Oak Peace Health Hospital, and hang out because they don't want to be, they don't want their kid to have that 2% chance of having a shoulder breach or a total breach or a wrapped cord or any of those things that can cause anything from broken clavicles to cerebral palsy. And Planned Parenthood has locations in all of these counties. Has there ever been any discussion of going beyond just the healthy start, but the healthy end, with the advocacy of making sure that these pregnancies that we work so hard to treat and test and everything, and apparently are very wanted because they're going that route, of helping these people out? I mean, this person, and it's a very complicated situation, but has there ever been any talk in Planned Parenthood? If not, I don't need an answer to today. I'd like you guys to talk about it, and the next time, see what the national organization or the local organization feels about that, because it would be easier to work with you than battle with insurance companies over that issue.
No kidding. I can tell you from 1999 to 2004, Mount Baker Planned Parenthood ran a full-service family medicine clinic in Bellingham. Cradle to grave, we did deliveries. We did abortion care. We helped facilitate adoptions. We did hospice care. We did in-hospital care. We had 10,000 family medicine patients. And we lost our liability coverage when the market turned and when physicians insurance, the big insurer in the state of Washington, decided to drop their facility wing. It was a beautiful model. What we found, and we tried to keep it alive, we could not buy insurance on the market, period. We used the largest, the most prestigious broker in the state of Washington to try to get us insurance. He said, don't worry about this, we will get you insurance. He could not get a single bid for us because we were by nature serving primarily low-income women and for births, and the insurance companies were just like, that's too much of a risk. I have Planned Parenthood is self-insured, and I've had this conversation many times with our national office about, you know, looking at the going back into that, and they're very adverse for this reason. So the Title X program of the state of Washington got together recently just to talk about the challenges facing. And there's a community health center that is a part of the Title X program. And one of the women in the meeting sits on the board of the Community Health Plan of Washington because that's owned by the community health centers. And we were talking about the value the family plan brings. And she said, here's what I'll tell you right now. This was in March, maybe April. And she said, Community Health Plan of Washington has already had $2 million babies in 2019. It is taking them to their knees. So it is a very difficult situation. Now, what we can provide, if we could figure out, is prenatal care. So if there is a dearth of prenatal care on the island, I would like to know about that, and that might be something if we have then a way to tag off to provide the delivery to another entity. That's something that we could definitely look at, because we did that for a while when we were in Bellingham, but then the physicians didn't want to do that in Bellingham because there's a lot of family doctors that provide health care, so they either wanted to do the whole thing or nothing. And so we didn't have the opportunity to do that, but if you want to talk about that, I'm more than happy to talk about that. In fact, one of our staff members is training to be a nurse midwife, and she's about a year away from getting her certificate in that. And there is a group looking to come onto the island a couple days a month to do nurse midwifery, and they had asked us about sharing space, and right now, because we are so targeted, I don't actually feel safe with that for them to share that space, because we wouldn't know, we wouldn't necessarily remember to let them know if something happened, it was going on. We don't know if they're only here 2 days a month. And so I'm mulling it over, but I'm not sure it's a good idea, not because of the mix. It'd be a perfect fit for the mix, but we're in a pretty volatile time right now, and it makes me a little bit uncomfortable to not know who's in our facility what days and whether it's secure or not secure.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Great questions.
Any other questions from the board? So then I have one referencing on your supplemental report specific to services provided here in Friday Harbor, page 4.
Okay.
Select clinical services of subset cancer screening and prevention.
Uh-huh.
I think the last go around we talked about possible colposcopy here? Do we have that yet? Or
we don't have that yet, and we have we haven't really seen the need for it over here yet. Where I am watching that, since you've talked about that, we're keeping an eye on that. We are using in Bellingham, Obi Gyne, who's coming in and doing our copo and our leap, and she's also doing our consulting for high-level gyne problems, because it's very difficult to get our patients who have no insurance or, you know, limited insurance into a private OB-GYN, so she does all the high-level work that we have. So that's our, that's what we're using her for, but we're keeping an eye on that.
Very good. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Any other questions, comments from the board? Linda, thank you. I hope you catch your ferry.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your support.
I hope the ferry's not late if you do catch it.
Yeah. I'm actually flying today because tonight, if those of you know, Bellingham just made the news for being one of the top brew communities in the country. And tonight they're doing Pint Night, something I never heard of. And all the breweries every quarter pick a charity to give a dollar for every pint of beer that they sell. And tonight is Pint Night for Mount Baker Planned Parenthood, and I get to go to each of them. So the only way to get there in time was to fly. So hopefully if it doesn't rain, I'll be on theirs. But thank you so much for your support. I appreciate this opportunity.
Well, drink a pint for me.
Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah. Thank you.
So, Dr. Mark Fishout, pediatrician here, so kindly asked to attend today to give us an update on San Juan Healthcare. Dr. Fishout?
Thank you. Again, for those of can everybody hear me?
Yes.
For those of you who don't know me, my name again is Mark Fishout, a pediatrician. I've been on the island since 2004. I've been a pediatrician now for 43 years. And have no particular desire to stop being one. Recently, I gave a similar presentation to the County Board of Health because of changes that I believe are significant for our community. And basically, I don't really want to see happen here what seems to have happened, as far as I can tell, on both Lopez and Orcas, which has many elements of private practice disappear there, the state of routine as opposed to emergent type healthcare is, to say the least, in a degree of chaos. I do not have details. I don't really intend to talk about what's happening elsewhere. My focus is on changes that are local, that are big in the sense that the retirement of Burke Gossam, which was first announced, decided and announced with letters to patients in at the end of April, marks the end of approximately 40 years of continuous practice in a couple of different settings, and represents around 50% of the population of this island, going back, of course, to when the population was significantly smaller. It is not my place to review the ins and outs and details of reasons for that retirement, nor to review the history of medical care of the last several decades. Suffice it to say, the impact is significant. Bert placed an ad, to my understanding, and I've reviewed it in at least one family practice journal. I'm not privy to what replies have or have not been received relative to looking for someone to take over the practice. I did place an announcement in a couple of our local media, namely the Islander and the Update, but not the Journal, noting that both I and one of our associates, a full-time physician's assistant named Heather Christensen, had no intention of retiring, because the assumption by many in the community was that everybody was retiring and the practice was closing outright. Needless to say, that created and continues to create a degree of confusion, a concern, and bewilderment among many in the community. As of this week, there is nothing further to report on status changes in the practice, and it has an anticipated closure date at the end of November of this year. What I'd like to do is review for you the composition of the practice and, to a degree, its size. I'm not able to provide you detailed demographics because we have gone through some very significant issues with medical record systems, which has, again, been a contributor to decisions made to retire from practice and is one of the things that drives many people nationally out of practice. I will talk a bit about what we have done and deal with some implications for the community and review what I see as some challenges for the community. I underline the word community because so much, and I'll say this again at the end, of what happens in our island is in their each individual box, where everyone involved who has something to do or affected by a major decision in the community doesn't participate in it, nor often is ignorant of it. Burke is dual boarded in family practice and geriatrics. As I said, he's been full-time on the island for 40 plus years. The practice is an established, principally high-risk geriatric practice and a substantial small general family practice, but no longer, since I've been there, any peds under his wing. There are significant numbers of chronic pain patients, including those on narcotic agents, which has future implications as well. The practice includes many who were at the Life Care Center and now at the Village. I'm a boarded pediatrician. I've been here on the island for 15 years. I am part-time, but full-time committed. I would note on a personal note that my practice prior to coming to this island, I had viewed as more of a job. It has become my passion and my full-time commitment since I've lived here. That's a compliment to all of you in the community. I take care of more than 50% of the under 18 population on the island, including many college students, which is not usual for most pediatricians. I and my associates take care of almost all the complex pediatrics on the island, as well as including those with learning disabilities, behavior issues, mental health issues, mostly from the public school and some from private schools, as well as complex pharmacologic regimens, including controlled stimulants. Care for most of the Latino community on the island is provided in our office, particularly the kids. Long-term relationship with the public schools and one private school have been established over many years, as well as systematic work with some of the better mental health professionals on this island to provide wraparound care for children. Heather Christensen is a full-time physician's assistant with a very substantial female clientele of all ages, as well as general family practice, including children. Carolyn Hansen is a part-time physician's assistant with a small general family practice with very limited pediatrics. Here's what I see have been the implications for the community. One, a large pool of patients, including a disproportionate number with complex problems across the age spectrum, face the loss of care. Two, a time frame to appropriately fill the gap left by this retirement is extremely short. Very often, especially in rural environments such as ours, the planning phases for transitions of practices are 1 to 2 years, sometimes longer, not 6 months. Three, the remaining providers in the community are not, I think, either physically able by the nature of where they work, namely at Peace Health, to assume a practice ownership or have the space to do so. There is inadequate community understanding of the timing and the issues, and many still do not know that it is even occurring. Five, unknowns of others, as I said, if other established providers in the community can rapidly absorb approximately a doubling of their practice in short order or have the desire to do so. Here's what I see are the challenges. I'm not offering solutions. I don't think it's up to an individual to do so, which is part of the point of being here. One, even in a saturated urban or suburban market, physician replacement, as I said, takes considerable time and effort. Two, rural health care is a continual, ongoing national crisis mode with high patient-to-provider ratios, with more rural practices closing everywhere. Three, patient-to-pediatrician ratios are even more extreme than those of family practice or internal medicine. Only 8% of rural counties in this country have any professional pediatrician care. That's not the same as pediatric care, obviously, and this is not casting aspersions on other professionals. I view my profession as a primary care specialty, and I think most do as well. Four, rural areas that have some success at attracting physicians and other healthcare providers do so largely because the cost of living, mainly housing, is substantially lower than in urban and suburban areas. We all know this is absolutely not the case in this community. It, in fact, is the opposite. Five, most healthcare systems have poor track records in rural medicines, and those that do often tend to limit Medicare and Medicaid in their primary care facilities. Peace Health, of course, it is an exception to that. Six, rural areas that have success in recruiting providers do so through community efforts that historically include initial income guarantees, partial underwriting of housing, including things like down payments, favorable interest rates, spousal partner employment, and the like. This has never been a part of the local culture of this island, which, of course, the effects are obvious. That being said, my concern to a small degree is my own professional future, but that is not relevant. I care for the fact that this is a rapid change in the potential care of a large proportion of this island. I expect no instant solutions from this or any other group, but I feel it's my personal responsibility to not be a Cassandra or Jeremiah, but to raise attention to matters that is pretty obvious have not received appropriate, recognition or understanding from the community. So my role, I believe at this time, is information sharing. I'd be happy to answer as best I can any questions, but obviously this is an open-ended and significant issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Any comments or questions from the board?
Dr. Fischot, do you have a sense of how many active patients your practice has right now?
3,000. It's about probably 48-49% of the total population. Obviously, this is a complex community with many people either choosing to receive no care because they can't or don't want it, or the significant seasonal transient community who gets their health care elsewhere. I will again say that of that 3,000, under 1,000, of course, are children. We all know that there is a population skew in this county almost at the very end of rural counties in the country, and we all know the many reasons for this. That being said, that reflects the demographics of the practice. Medicare and Medicaid are dominant insurers for our practice, and I'm still trying to get a further age sex bucket breakdown. This has been very challenging for us because we've gone through some major chaos, I would say, out of our control in various changes in electronic record systems that staying current with it has taken precedent over data extraction. That's the best estimate. I came to the estimate of the population based on the number of letters that were sent out to absolutely known participants and some rough assumptions of family size, which at one end are smaller than most because of many single individual families, in quotes. There are many widows and widowers on this island. I think we know that. But there are many people, the average number of children per family is significantly higher than national average. So these are, to say that it was an accurate number for you would be misrepresentation. To say that it's a good approximation based on variables that include encounters per provider per session, and that compared to information I've gotten also from some of the folks at BSelf, is a reasonable estimate so that we can size the impact. You know, whether it's 2,000 or 3,000, the impact is very real.
And it seems the impact, if your office was to close, would be, you know, more EMS calls, more visits to the ER. I mean, as a patient of San Juan Healthcare, we've always been able to call and say, you know, we need an appointment today, and your office has always gotten us in. That's really an urgent care model in a lot of ways, the way you operate, which is not what we have at Peace Health.
Yeah, and I, you know, having spoken to a number of the emergency physicians at Peace Health, with whom we have very good relations, they're not keen to become an urgent center.
No.
The economics of all this, I think, are outside the scope of the discussion today. And that will figure into it, as you imply, but this is about people right now, not money. They're interconnected, but one of the other issues that's been raised that's been less important to me personally, because much of my career was spent in larger systems, is choice. Not competition between practice styles, but choice between a traditional private practice and a system-based practice. I'm not making any comment one way or the other than to say choice is a nice thing if you can have it. It is an extreme luxury, especially in rural America, where the choice usually is between something and nothing. Those of you who read many of the media, and I provided you folks with some significant references, and even the last few days there have been various articles about limited access to care in rural America. There was a very disturbing article in the Times, New York Times, about rural Tennessee. We are not in the situation of desperate poverty here, which is much of the driver of these areas. Nonetheless, access, given our geography, as has already been discussed with the allusion to the Kaiser situation, is real, it's meaningful, and fits into availability, bringing back to the beginning of your point.
And I just had a question about Dr. Gossam's practice in particular. Is it accurate to say that he provides care for mainly seniors?
Yes.
Okay.
He's a board of geriatrician.
Okay.
And if I look at his schedule every day, which I do, it's probably 75%. And again, many of them are people who have been his patients for 40 years, who he took care of younger adults, parents, and we take care of their children and grandchildren. One of the pleasures of working in a practice like this is that I can take care of the kids of teenagers, particularly soccer players who played for me at the high school. It's very gratifying. It's gratifying to go to weddings and then take care of children's. That's part of the reward of practicing in a personal environment. Of course, that too can be negative when you avoid people who want consultation at marketplace. And that's a fact of life of rural medicine. You get very good at changing aisles. But it's the reward is that, you know, you're taking care of your people. And that's something that has rapidly faded from medical care. That's not something we can control, but we can do our best to hold on to it. and take care of those who come to trust us. Fair enough?
It's just not this island, Dr. Sindstrom on Orcas has announced his retirement.
Exactly.
I've talked to a couple of people. There is one person that's sort of looking at the different practices, or maybe not. There's only one. When I first heard this, I asked the question of Pam and Nathan, you know, is there something we could do? I feel there's something we should do, but the question is our contract with Peace Health, there's a somewhat non-compete distribution of money clause. It's sort of like a non-compete clause dealing how we distribute the budget. But there's some gray areas in there in my thinking about, you know, they don't do pure pediatrics over here. We do have pure pediatrics. Is that advantageous to part of our population? I know that in my practice, when I practiced over here, I had several people, you know, that I think were your patients with seizure disorders, very complicated cases. So I'd hate to lose that. And I agree with you about the pure practice of medicine, the primary practice of medicine versus the industrial practice of medicine.
But
the could is, we would have hard underwriting it economically, I would think, having read that clause and gone over it. But I'm looking at other things that we might be able to do. I was hoping the press would be here and, you know, we could get this in the press. I would hope that would be that whatever Gossam wrote out would also be in Spanish for that population. But I'm open to, I personally am open to whatever I can do.
Well, I think, can I answer that?
Sure.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I think at this point, engaging, as I said right at the beginning, engaging everybody in the conversation, including senior peace health management, meaning specifically from Bellingham, as well as the health department is interested. You were at my last presentation. Mark Hockney, Tompkins is interested. I think at this point the issue is not to jump to how do we fund something, but what does the community want? It's not for me to say, I want you to want me, for example. I want to know what you want. I think we need to, in rapid order, get the key players together, not to develop yet some mega action plan that takes too long to come together and then fades away. This is not something that's new to anybody in this room, but just what do we do next? You know, what are the stopgap measures if needed? If the practice doesn't get turned over to someone else, if someone does in the interim choose to come to the island and take over the practice, more power to them. But it still becomes a matter of people getting used to new physicians, what happens to medical records, what are medical legal responsibilities. You know, the whole issue, as some of you know already, who have retired from practice, that the process is not simply one of saying goodbye. It's a matter of disengagement that has rules, laws, responsibilities, and costs associated with it. And that's life. My concern is how quickly this is happening.
The one thing we can do is we can ask Peace Health, that we're under the contract, we have a duty, a proprietary duty, to observe the contracts that we have, and we have one with Peace Health, is to ask them how aware they are in the program, what into the problem, do they have anticipated solutions so that we start getting that discussion into the public.
I think that's quite reasonable.
So I would propose that we ask Peace Health to respond to this at the next meeting and come and talk to us about what they see and what their capabilities are if in fact this happens in November.
So Dr. Fishout and Warren, Pam and I attended a joint meeting between the Washington State Hospital Association and the Association of Public Hospital Districts, you know, Lake Chelan, just, well, it ended yesterday. And one of the things that we did proactively is approach Mary Ann Keene, who is the CEO equivalent of Peace Island Medical Center. And we asked her to look into two issues. One is the willingness and capability of Peace Island Medical Center, and worst case scenario, if Dr. Gossam's practice isn't passed into physicians' hands, could they and would they assume care of those individuals that otherwise would be left behind? And the answer was yes. The second question was more specific to, it's a married group, is it, Pam? Which is a Medicaid insurance instrument that Dr. Gossam has had for many years, Peace Health hasn't. And Mary Ann Keene is currently looking into that, but her answer was yes, they accommodate those patients in Bellingham, and there's no reason why they can't do that here. But it, you know, they'd have to apply specific to Peace Island Medical Center, et cetera, et cetera. So that kind of answers your question. Warren, in terms of their capability and willingness to do so, yeah, they're hopeful that Dr. Gossam sells his practice. Having a choice, as you said, Mark, is the yep. best way. But if that doesn't happen, at least in a stopgap way of thinking, you know, they're willing to stand in. So good for them. Any other questions from the board?
I guess my question wasn't whether they're willing or not. I think they'd be willing. Whether with the staffing they have now, they're capable.
Well, basically, their offering comes from Peace Health's medical group. So it's not specific to the staff that we have in hand at Peace Island Medical Center. It's from Bellingham. So they would stand in and supplement what would be lacking here staff-wise. So I think that base is covered as well.
Yeah, I've already had some preliminary informal conversation with the VP of Physicians, who's in fact a pediatrician, about this. But you know, again, things take time, and we don't have a lot. Okay. Anything else?
Is it worth our time as a board to form a subcommittee that could then meet with administrators of Peace Health, the health department, and people from San Juan Healthcare to address this issue? If there is either a solution or a transition? I think we have a responsibility to the community to provide health care. I'm concerned that it seems that San Juan Healthcare provides about the same amount or has the same amount of patients as Peace Health does. I'm worried that the Latino community will be disenfranchised. I'm concerned that the cost of the ER is a lot higher than the cost of a, you know, same day appointment. I think we owe this our attention.
Well, you know, reflecting the conversation I had with Mary Ann Keene, I think the ball is rolling. You know, I'm trying to think through your proposal, I guess you'd call it that, as far as what else we could do. Dr. Appleton, you know, clearly referenced the contractual restraints we have in terms of anti-competitive provisos, duplication of services, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm at a loss, frankly, as far as what the board can do other than support the concept of trying to have Dr. Gossam sell his practice, frankly, as opposed to letting it go. How we can do that other than support it verbally and philosophically, you know, again, I'm at a loss. Any other comments? Dr. Mark, do you have any comments in that regard?
Mark, yeah. So we all share our concern and support for this, and I'm glad you're talking with Peace Island Administration. And I think the proper people are talking to each other, and I'm not sure what else we could add to that.
Rebecca?
I guess I agree. I think that would just put too many people in the mix right now. We already know about the situation. They're already working on it, so I think that would be up to them rather than up to us. I think it would be very difficult for us to step into the situation in view of the contract that we have.
I think, can I make a comment?
Yeah.
I would I think the most useful thing at this point is the board might consider recognizing, you know, in its minutes following this presentation, that the board recognizes and understands the changes that are in the occurring in the community, and that's probably the single most important thing. Recognition, it helps spread the word throughout the community if relevant entities such as this publicly say we understand and look forward to solutions to it without specifying what those solutions might be. Ultimately, since, among other things, we do not know at this time what the future of that private practice will be. And, you know, so as long as I, you know, from my personal perspective, just knowing that the board has heard that there's an issue here, that it's a public concern, and it relates to care of the within the hospital district, at this point, for me, and I can't speak for you, would be what I would seek. So if that is something that you folks could agree upon, it doesn't commit you to anything other than recognizing concern. Fair enough?
Yeah, very fair. And actually, that's consistent with what I suggested. You know, certainly, I assume that the rest of the board would concur with me that we empathize with your situation. We empathize with the situation in our community of perhaps not having a choice, not having somebody with, you know, 40 years of clinical experience specific to this island, and we're very different, and a whole host of other attendant losses that come with this. Again, you know, beyond verbal support and philosophical support, which I agree, and I'm going to proffer a motion consistent with what you suggested. I think we're limited, as we have explained before. So that given, I'd like to proffer a motion that the San Juan Island PhD number one supports the retention, frankly, of Dr. Gossin's practice, if at all possible, and also supports thanks Peace Health, Peace Island Medical Center for offering clinical services to help mitigate the loss of
any potential
loss of Dr. Gossin's practice.
Can I intrude one thing? I would not say Dr. Gossin's practice, San Juan Healthcare.
Yeah, that's fine.
Because I am not, I nor the physician's assistant are Dr. Gossin.
That's right.
Okay.
And I second that one.
Okay.
Are we going to make it as a motion, or is it just a direction to staff to write a press release to that end?
Michael Edwards made a motion.
Well, I made a motion. That's number one. It has been seconded. And, you know, certainly that a press release is in order as well. That's a secondary consideration.
Well, I'm just wondering if we don't want to include this in the motion all at one time. Yeah, a press release to that end. That, you know, this is something that's happening that has potential to go one way or the other. People need to know about it. We need to have a community discussion, and we're monitoring what we can monitor from this end.
So I would add to my motion, and this motion, if passed, be distributed to the press for publication.
Second.
We have a tertiary. So any discussion? Call for a vote. All in favor say aye.
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 Passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd also know one other thing. There are jobs involved too. I mean, mine is irrelevant. For me, it's a wonderful hobby, to be honest with you. There are people who have jobs who will lose them if the practice closes. Mm-hmm.
Do you know how big your staff is?
There are, let's see, two physicians assistant, an office manager, referrals person, billing person, two receptionists, lab person. There's staff of 11. Mm-hmm. Not all full-time, but 11 people, some of whom are full-time.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.